Yes, being here. We've been in a foreign place, in a foreign land. There's so many things that there's no words to describe. I've got a number of pictures. I'm going to show a lot of pictures to some of the kids tonight and show some experiences to them. But I want a few things just to kind of put things in perspective this week. One of the places that Brother Philip and Nathan and I traveled to, we were kind of in the downtown area of a different city. And there's a lot of artwork on the walls, and some of it was rather interesting. There's actually one wall had a mural. I don't know who painted it. Somebody who lives there evidently painted a mural of every president of the United States. I'm going to turn this on, Jeff. And, of course, some of them were more important to them. John F. Kennedy, they boldly said, the first Catholic president. And by the way, I mentioned something about Catholics and Muslims this morning in the colonial days of America. Some of you, it's a little before my, well, I was a very small child at the time, but that was a big thing when a Catholic was elected president, because their first allegiance is not to the United States of America. In fact, most of what the Catholic Church teaches is anti-American. Of course, they've changed that, so it's gets some acceptance here in America, but anybody who knows truth and history understands that, but very few people know truth and very few people know history today. But there is a picture, and someone said, in fact, we looked at this picture and I thought, what in the world is that? Brother Philip explained the picture to me, and it took some time, and I took actually a picture of the picture, the painting, a mural on the wall, and he said a picture could tell 1,000 words. And this is actually the title, if you could see it over there on the left side. I don't know how to read it in Portuguese, but the translation is The History of Immigration. This is what island life is like. In any small island country, it's the same story. There's a mother there holding a little baby. And if you were in an island country, you'll see that there's much poverty. And there's very limited resources, very limited jobs on that island. And if a man's going to provide for his family, he's going to have to leave his family and go to a foreign country, literally, to earn a living for his family. And so we have the wife on the left side holding that little baby and the husband's over on the right signifying living in a different country. And you notice there's little airplanes that he's throwing to his wife in the picture. And in those airplanes are pictures of dollar bills. That's how he's supporting his family. And oftentimes in these countries, again, this is one of these things that we can't even comprehend in our culture today. If I'm going to support my family, I'm going to have to go overseas, sometimes for a year or two at a time, and save money and send money back home. And then when I've got enough money sent home and enough to live on for a couple of years, I'm able to go home and live beside my family for a couple of years until we run out of money. Then it's time to go again. And that's the story of many places in our world today. And we're so sheltered from reality, we can't even fathom that. And again, as Brother Philip was explaining that picture to me and what life is like on Cape Verde or any island country, you can begin to see that. And he said again, he made that statement, a picture is worth 1,000 words. But then a thought came to me, but a philosophy is worth 1,000,000 words. You see, what we see in that picture is determined by our philosophy. What we hear in a sermon or what we hear or see when we read the news is worth 1,000,000 words. How we filter that, how we see things means so much. We talked a little bit this morning about our worldview. That's a term that I don't really care for that term, but that term's used a lot in Christianity today. Our worldview, how we perceive our world, our philosophy, which maybe is a little bit better word, the filter system, how we understand, how we comprehend things is so different once you get out of what's comfortable. One of the reasons I like to take the teen boys on a trip in the wilderness is to get them away from everything that's comfortable, to get them out of their environment. And I'm constantly reminding them, Mama's not here to take care of you. You got to learn to survive on your own. And even this year's trip, Pastor wasn't there for part of it. I was AOL for a lot of it. And they proved themselves well. To stand and to get outside of what we're used to, outside of what we're comfortable. I've enjoyed this week doing one of the things I kind of, because I'm kind of a bashful person by nature, I feel much better in this environment sitting out there than I am up here, but I just enjoy watching people, sometimes from a distance. And you can learn so much from watching people. Some of the stories, and I was relating to some things that I wanted to share with you this morning and then draw it together, but just some of the scenes that, hey, there's an airport security, and all the people, all the different walks and wakes of life, and some of these folks are national people, some of them probably going to, in fact, there's one man, he's not in this picture that we talked to for a while, that his head was right here, and then he had another ball of something bigger than his head attached to him and a big beard. And I tell you what, he was a pretty, little bit intimidating when you see him, but he was one of the friendliest guys that you would ever meet. And he talked about he's going home to his family. He was not from Cape Verde, but he was actually passing through from another place and to earn some money that he's been sending, just like that picture. He's going back to spend some time to see his wife and kids and now a couple of grandkids that he hasn't seen for over a year. That's just the reality. And you see folks from every walk of life and to just hear them and then to not understand what they're saying is something else. This language and that language, I was amazed. And sometimes I got playing this game. I wonder what language that is. Because they weren't all speaking Portuguese. Sometimes I would recognize a little bit of German. I just speaking. And I found out rather than greeting, when you ask how they greet each other, I just say, hello, how you doing? Because if you start speaking the few words I know in Portuguese, they'll think they can talk to you now. I don't understand anything. I'm just the dumb white boy. I didn't know anything. But there's some people watching. And there's some folks getting their luggage after a ferry ride. And again, some of those folks were from different countries and different tour groups. And it was very interesting. Every once in a while, we spent the whole day waiting at the airport just to find out our flight was canceled. Some of those people were the same ones that were at the airport. Sometimes we were with a group, and one person in the group spoke English, so we started learning things about different nationalities, different countries, and just watching people, everyday life, and just walking through the streets, seeing the way people live in the rest of the world. There's the Walmart, a number of pictures. You complain about not getting an aisle down the cart. You couldn't hardly fit a person down some of those, getting a cart down the aisle. You couldn't fit a person down some of those aisles. And everyone you made contact with was trying to sell you something. So we tried to ignore them. In fact, I picked up a nice shirt there. Should I wear it tonight? Oh boy, that could be interesting. That might cause a church split. I don't know. There's some grocery shopping. You should have seen the meat market there, because this was the shaded area where the vegetables were, where the meat was in the hot sunshine. And I wasn't sure what that meat was. Sometimes I ate things. I wasn't sure what it was. I'm one of the people, I don't mind asking people what it is. Sometimes we feed people at our house and we don't tell them what it is. But it's roadkill. We'll just call it that. But and there's Nathan buying something at the store down the corner. My wife went with him one day just to take a picture. I went with him once, and he was like a tour guy going through the aisle. Well, this is where sometimes they have this. In fact, we went there to find two essentials, some Kleenex for the runny nose and some toilet paper for other things, and they didn't have either one of them. We found diapers and wet wipes. Neither one of them were going to do, so they just didn't have them in the store that week. So we went to another store. They just didn't happen to be open that week, so we just made do. There's the dear people of one day, the last Thursday night service. We went to a different church, and there's the people from the church that we usually are at that came up to sing a song. It is well with my soul. Words you've never heard before, but you knew the tune. And there's Nathan and one of his little buddies next door. Notice the plush green yards they have. In the back is a milkweed. Milkweed is the desired feed for cows. Well, there's one thing they like better than milkweed, and that is concrete bags. I actually had a piece of, Brother Philip got a steak at one of the places we were at, and he gave me a piece, and he said, "What do you think of it?" I said, "That is absolutely the worst steak I've ever had in my entire life. It tasted kind of like concrete bags. I don't know." This what life is like. This is a man, I was telling Rex, he's down in junior church. This is a man that's 93 years old. He couldn't speak a word of English. I couldn't speak a word of Portuguese. But I kind of heard through stories, and actually Klavish, one of my interpreters, that's his great-grandfather-in-law. It's his wife's great-grandfather. 93 years old. He's been around the block a few times. And Klavish started telling me stories about what his grandfather's childhood was like. He lived through the days of World War II. World War II, well, that didn't involve Cape Verde. Oh, yes, it did. There was never any battle fought there. There was never a soldier that stepped foot in Cape Verde during the war. The French built an army base before the war, but it was never used after it was built. But they were greatly affected by World War II. They're an island country that literally cannot sustain themselves with food. They're completely dependent upon someone else, where their supply lines were cut off. And then add to that, just at the beginning of World War II, and again at the end of World War II, there was an extreme drought. It seemed like it was a drought. They haven't had rain for months, and all the reservoirs were completely dried up while we were there. And he would tell stories to his family about what it was like when he was a child. Now, picture this. You can't get any supply lines there because they were getting blown up. There was mass starvation everywhere. Him and his buddies, they got 7 people on a boat because they heard there was food on another island. Those seven boats that were loaded with people went over there to get food. They came back with only 4 boats, and half of the people survived, and no food. They were no better off than they went from one place to another. And he talked about being a survivor of World War II, and I just got to get. And I told him, I want to get a picture of you. He's not saved. I couldn't pronounce his name when I heard it, and I can't remember what his name was. But he said the only. I told him my dad fought in World War II, and he said there are no fighting here other than on the streets to find food to eat. And he had literally big notches on his ear that's facing me. You can kind of see one of them, and he said that's from fighting over food when he was a boy one time. Got hit by a rock was what he got hit by. But we can't even imagine what life. And we think of a war, but the people that were fighting that, those wars affected a lot more people than we could ever. And I just thought that story is just so fascinating to me. And there's some friends. And you notice the difference. We're watching people. And looking at, there's some dear Christian folks in church that our kids have befriended, and there's a little irresistible Grace's little, I call her twin sister, chocolate and vanilla, twin sister, and then there's the market. that lady with the fruit in her basket. She was literally wandering. I have no idea how old she was. She was just wandering around. This was a bus stop. And by the way, the buses are those vans back there. They're the big buses. You'd be surprised how many people can fit in one of those things. She's selling, trying to make a living selling some fresh fruit to folks. And the interesting thing was, when she was selling it, she would somehow get her hand all the way up there and sort through it and pull out exactly what she needed and sell it to someone, never taking anything off her head. I'm not sure she could get it back up there. She got it down. But that's just what life is like. And there's the superhighway that we got to take around the volcano island. And there's a little traffic jam there with a cargo truck. That's the straw for the animals. They just find whatever they can for the animals to lay. And there was a man fishing one day that I was fascinated. In fact, he was fishing with a pole, but he didn't have a pole. He had a string. And I actually took a video of him casting that pole. He had a weight to hold it down and a hook on there. He kind of did like a David and Goliath sling throw. And then he sat there. And the interesting thing was, Nathan and I were watching as the sun came down because the tide was coming up. And he's out there in that little rock. He walked out there at low tide, and now the tide's coming up. I thought, that tide better stop real soon, or he's going to be in a heap of trouble. And he was literally, that's how he's hoping to catch something so he can survive the next day. And that's just life. Life is harder than we can ever imagine. And those are just a few of the things that, in the reality of living in a place that's so foreign to us. And again, pictures can't do it justice. And I was thinking, as I was people watching, how that we see so much on the surface that we really don't know. We see people of different color, different language, different behavior. They wear a different uniform, so to speak. I was watching two that were waiting at the airport. There were two girls beside each other. They looked like they might have been sisters. And one of them had all kinds of cuttings in her body with tattoos and piercings and everything else, like heathen do in America today. And I thought, and they lived that lifestyle. Yeah, I could see they were brokenhearted about some. Evidently, and I couldn't talk to them because of the language barrier. Evidently, you could tell by the way they were sharing things and talking. They were going to visit someone, a loved one that was either sick or had passed away. But you see different things and you try to guess what they're saying. And again, in our culture, we're so politically correct, we can't be real and honest with each other. One of the stories that we laughed about it all week, when Nathan and Philip and I went to another island, Brother Philip was actually trying to line up a missions trip that he's bringing a group over to do some mass evangelism while he's over there, because they want to start a church over there. And Brother Clavish is from that island, and actually his wife just recently had a baby, so she was at home to have the baby with her parents. While he was back on the island we were. So he was kind of taking us around, and he had connections because he grew up on that island. That's where the volcano was that we climbed. And while we were driving around, we met with different school administrators because they wanted to go into the schools and give these packets of things out to the school teachers. And one of the places we went, Clavish said, oh, this ought to be a good visit because the school director in this region is somebody that I knew as a teenager. I went to school with. And we went there, and he wasn't there. They got a hold of him on the phone eventually. I couldn't understand what was saying, but Nathan interpreted it for me later, and we got a good kick out of it. He said, well, Clavish is here and three white guys. So we called ourselves Clavish and the Three White Guys. We're going to start a band or something. And I thought it was kind of funny to me because we wouldn't state the obvious because we might offend somebody in America. But they just said, and they knew that these guys, they were talking to them in Portuguese. They knew that they understood. I just didn't understand Portuguese. I just got to get Clavish and the Three White Guys are here to see you about something. But isn't it amazing how, somebody's wearing a uniform and we're afraid to acknowledge what team they're on? You know, man sees what's on the outside. And what's on the outside tells us a lot about what's on the inside. Now, man only sees on the outside, but God sees what's in the heart. In preaching and the singing, I could just see the joy and hear the joy, even though I couldn't understand. And actually, in those conversations with the different schoolmen, and again, in Africa, this was a 2-day job to go to these different school administrators. And in America, it probably could have been done in 15 minutes with a couple of phone calls. But it took 2 days, literally, to go around and to meet with these people and talk to them in person, to get contact with them, just to get their permission, which technically they didn't need their permission. They just thought it would open doors a little bit better if we had their permission. But in the course of those conversations, I knew what we were going in there for. I didn't speak any language, any of the language that they were talking. But when we left, I was just sitting there watching everybody else. When they smiled, I smiled. When they looked serious, I looked serious. Make sure I watch the right person. You can get yourself in trouble if you smile at the wrong time. I'm just kind of watching. I'm like, okay, he's smiling, I'll smile. He nodded his head this way, I'm nodding my head that way. I didn't understand a word that was said, but after we left, I could tell them exactly what transpired in that conversation just by the language of the person, by the body language of what that person was saying. By the tone of his voice, I could see so much. The one guy that he gave us our permission, he looked at the stuff and he basically said, "I'm not a Christian, but this would be good. This would be good for our kids to see what morality is supposed to look like." And I could see that in him. I said, "Well, he said this. That's exactly what he said." Did you learn Portuguese overnight? No, I just could tell by what he said. And the other guy, you could tell by his reaction, and he was the one that grew up with Clovis and knew him, and you could tell he was doing the politically correct thing. I would love to have you come, but I'm not sure if this is the right thing to do. I'm going to have to check with it. And he was kind of pushing the responsibility of someone else. But what I'm saying is you could just kind of see where folks are at by their body language, by their outward expressions. And you can learn so much by watching people and paying attention. But in reality, only God knows what's in our heart. If I'm going to be a good Christian, by the way, I ought to be on the outside what I am on the inside. Hello? A lot of folks say, well, there's a bunch of hypocrites in the church. Well, come and join us. Because nobody can truly be on the outside what they are. And we're filthy, wicked sinners on the inside. But God saved us of His grace. And I've got the Holy Spirit of God living inside of me. Now, if I want to be if I want to present people on the outside what's on the inside, I'm going to live a holy life for God. I'm not going to wear the uniform. Sometimes, a young lady comes dressed like a harlot and you say, well, you really ought not to dress that way. Well, who are you to judge me? And all this silliness. My wife and I are a little disappointed because we're missing the March Madness basketball. It's the only basketball we watch is the college basketball. And you watch a ball game and you notice one team has one color uniform. The other team has the other color uniform. They're identified by their uniform. And the same thing in Christianity. We're identified by our uniform. If you're not a harlot, why are you wearing the uniform of a harlot? Huh? If you're a heathen, if you're not a heathen, why are you wearing the uniform of a heathen? If you're a Christian, why don't you wear the uniform of a Christian? It's really that simple, but you get yourself in trouble if you state the obvious in some people's eyes. But man does see, and you can tell so much by the outward appearance and the outward expressions. And that eventually really comes to light when you're in a place where you don't understand the language. You can learn so much about people and communicate to them just by your body language, by your uniform, if you will. But only God knows the heart. In reality, if we're willing to be honest and listen to our heart, God will tell us things that are very uncomfortable. God taught me some things this week that some of them I want to share with you that, to be quite honest, I kind of introduced you to it in Sunday school. very uncomfortable about our brand of Christianity. I learned a lot about my own heart this week in trying to communicate and looking at the heart of others. And one of the things, and I just want to mention this morning and just share this in John 3:16, the verse, a familiar verse in the Bible, in the story of Nicodemus in John chapter number 3. If nothing else, we need to realize that we live in a big world. And God so loved the United States. God so loved the world. This world is a big place that we don't understand. I love to try, and one of the messages I preach, I said, this is the farthest I've ever been away from what I've called home my entire life. But one day I'm going to a farther away place in heaven. I compare the differences between what we, if you can look around everything that you see that's familiar, I saw absolutely nothing that looked familiar for 2 weeks other than the faces of our kids and grandkids. That's it. And they even look different. But it's just so different than we could ever comprehend. And this is a big world that we live in. And some folks get so comfortable and so set in our ways, we can't even consider the fact that there are other people out there that don't think the way we think. Let me use this illustration. I don't know if I've ever used it in church. I've told it a few people before. I like to read about different historical figures, especially about 200 or 250 years ago. And in the days of, and again, we can't call them Indians because people get offended at that, the Native Americans, and who the evolutionists told us they're less than human, so we can just wipe them out. That's the great contribution of evolution. But their mentality was so different than ours. For example, Daniel Boone was taken captive. He's one of my heroes, if you don't mind me mentioning him. My wife says, every time you mention that name, you're going to know. But I like to talk about it. He was actually taken captive by an Indian tribe for 2 years, where he lived among the Indians. When he was first captured, he was, again, we can't comprehend what the world was like. He was with some salt makers. And by the way, salt is something you need to survive. They had no salt. Where do you get salt around here? I showed Nathan how it was collected in the tide pools where the water collected there, evaporated, and there's salt left there. So don't eat that salt, though. I wouldn't suggest eating it. And how do you get salt in the Midwest? Before you can mine. I mean, we're talking about settlers. They didn't have tools of mine to get salt. They literally would go to a spring somewhere, and boil that water, and eventually you get salt out of fresh water. And they would call them the salt makers. And the only way they can do that is to keep a fire going to evaporate the water and then collect the salt. And you can imagine the tedious work that is. And Daniel Boone and a group of, he was with the salt makers. He went to check on them. And at that time, these guys, and again, they're trying to hide from the Indians around, and the fire attracts them at night because of the light and the smoke in the daytime. They try to build a fire without any light, without fire, without smoke. It's hard to do. The Indians finally found their spot, and Daniel Boone happened to be there, and they surrounded them and captured them. And he was taken a prisoner. They realized that he was different than the rest, and the chief of that tribe of Indians that took him captive said that you were there when my son was killed in a battle a few months ago. In fact, I believe in the reports I hear, you're the man that killed my son. He was not the one that killed his son, but Daniel was I'm in a heap of trouble here. White boy in big trouble. How? And he called him into his room, into his teepee for a private meeting. And said, you killed my son. And through the interpreters and different bouncing around in different languages to try to communicate to each other, Daniel Boone again figured out that he's saying that I can't deny it. He's got his mind made up that I'm the one that killed his son. And he said, I'm going to be the first one of us executed. I'm expecting any time they're going to take me out and fill me with, make a pincushion out of me. But instead that she said, because you killed my son, I will adopt you and you will become my son. And that's their mentality. He was treated as a son of the chief, given all the rights and the responsibilities. Literally, if the chief would have died, Daniel Boone would have been the chief, the rightful heir of the chief of that tribe of Indians. Now, that's not the way we think, is it? That's the way they thought. And there are other stories that they thought so different. And we think, well, that's just stupid. Now, who's to say who's right and who's wrong? By the way, God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. That seems to make more sense to go that way than the way we think. Who's the backwards ones here? We're talking, those are the pagans. We're the Christians that we're going to convert. There's so much that we could learn. But this world that we live in is a big place. And this world that we live in needs to hear the saving message of Jesus Christ. They're not going to hear unless someone will go. Someone needs to care enough to go. Would we give our life to leave everything that's familiar to us? And I could see you, there's two things that, well, the one thing that I wish I would have brought for Andrew. He was out there with a stick and rocks hitting the ball and writing score down. He'd come in after playing for a while and says, the Cubs just beat the Cardinals. Here's the official score. And he went through all the statistics and everything. However, people have never heard of baseball before. They don't know what a baseball is. But he said Rizzo hit a home run. And he went all through all the statistics. I mean, he had his game going out there. And after a while, he said, Grandpa, can you come out and play catch with me? I've got Nathan's glove and Andrew's glove. And it went out and he had one baseball. I wish I would have brought a baseball over there. The ball that he had, the cover was basically gone. You could throw good curveballs because there was so much of the cover sticking out. It would catch and cause the thing to turn. And just the things that, and you couldn't go every time we went to a market. I said, is there anywhere you can get a baseball? There's no such thing. I've never seen one. So Nathan, Andrew, next time we send something over, I'm going to put a baseball in there for you. Just the things that we take for granted. But he didn't care. He said, Grandpa, you don't have to do that. This one's just fine. And when it wears out, I can always find a rock that we can play with, and that works just fine. And somebody asked, how are the kids? The kids have adapted a lot better than the adults have. They're getting along just fine. In fact, they will end up being more mature than anyone that's grown up in one culture could ever be. Because they have a bigger picture of the world that God so loved, that gave Himself for it. They'll see things that you and I will never see, and they'll understand things that you and I will never understand. That's just become a part of their life. And I think what a thing it is to the culture shock, to go from one world to the next. A third world country, or a politically correct way to call it, is a less privileged country, because we don't want to talk down or whatever. But they're a completely different world than we could ever even begin to imagine. And to look at the farmland, and you think that the farmland that we saw was nothing but rocks and a little bit of dirt sprinkled between the rocks. And believe it or not, I've tried to get pictures, but we were going on a car ride with Brother Philip, and they don't have roller coasters there, but Brother Philip drives a bus better than any roller coaster I've ever been on. And the kids in the back, it's a good thing they had plastic bags that they put into use. I was glad I was in the front, or I might have had to use one too. I tried to get a picture of some of the fields that we went by, and there was nothing. You could tell it was a cornfield because mixed with the little clumps of dirt and the rocks were corn stalks that the cows hadn't found and eaten yet. Literally everything they plant, they get plenty of sunshine, but there's no water. They've got to get water out there to those somehow and make that salt water, which is all that's available, into fresh water. And the few little rains that they get, they got reservoirs to collect that rainwater, but it's gone in a matter of months. We can't even begin to think what that would be like to live. And we just go out and plant something. We've got it so easy here. We don't realize how easy we have it. I'm grateful that we were there during the cold season. I mean, it got all the way down into the upper 60s at night. We actually need to turn the fan off for a little bit to sleep. During the hot season, it's gets down to 80 or so at nighttime. And by the way, air conditioning is unheard of. Heat is unheard of. No need for that. And we can't imagine what that culture is like. And yet I think, what kind of culture shock did Jesus face when he left the throne of heaven, where all of heaven is worshiping him, and he came down to be a man, a servant of men? You talk about a culture shock. And he gave us that pattern to live after. Someone needs to go. I'm so grateful that we're able to be a part of that one that's willing to go to tell him, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. God's given so much more to me than I could ever give to him. And sometimes my family say, well, how can you stand having your son and your grandchildren? Because I realize what Jesus did for me. And the price that he paid is so much more than I'll ever pay. And I feel privileged and honored that someone from our church, someone from my family is going to follow the Lord in that area. Someone needs to go. Someone needs to send, not only with finances, but to pray for them. Brother Philip was talking about the one area that they started, where his dad actually started the first church, and they've got a national pastor there now, and they've got actually a college campus there, if you want to call it that, where they can house people. They actually had a bed in one of the rooms. Otherwise, they sleep on a tile floor. But that's where some of the students, but because the students all are working in the city that they're in now, they weren't able to get back. They have actually two different colleges going now where they're training preacher boys to preach the gospel. And he was talking about the satanic opposition that they face. And again, it's something that's beyond our comprehension, the opposition that they face. And in a culture that has no Christian foundation. He said, what would you say? And he looked at me while he was explaining things. He said, what would you suggest we do, preacher? How could we be more effective? And I said, I don't know what you can do, but I know what I can do. I can pray a whole lot more. God's people at home can pray a whole lot more, because that battle is greater. Those that are in the military and know what it's like to be on a battlefield, I can guarantee you this battle is much more fierce and much more difficult than anything you've ever seen on a physical battlefield. The powers of hell itself standing against the powers of God. And we're trying to, with the feeble efforts that we have, trying to make a difference for God. I'm thankful for someone that's willing to go, to put their boots on the ground, so to speak. But we as God's people need to pray like never before. We need to be willing to send of our sons and daughters and of our children to the far regions beyond. And by the way, the devil's crowd's attacking us. It's not going to be long before we're on the defensive, because we've neglected our responsibility to be on the offensive. Jesus said the gates of hell should not prevail against us. We've been on the defense so long, we forgot that that's a command to be on the offense, to go into all the world. And now the world's coming at us to attack us because we've not gone with the gospel like we should have gone in years past. And the world we live in is a big place. And God loved that world. And I look at those folks, and there's, again, a picture of that man as the sun's going down, going out to try to catch fish. One of the fishermen, Nathan and I were wandering around, and these three men came down with a spear. They were actually going out to go swimming to try to spear some fish with a snorkel and mask. And and one of them could speak English, and we got talking to them, and I wanted to stick around long enough, but we had to get back to take some pictures of them going out and spearfishing. And he said, I said, that'd be interesting for me. I'd love to do that sometime, but I've never fished that way. And they, of course, had never seen a fishing pole. They wouldn't know what to do with a fishing pole if they had one. They were talking about, and they said, "Do you do fishing?" And I said, "Oh, I do at home." He said, "Oh, but you do it for pleasure. We do it for survival. If they don't catch something that day, they don't eat that day. If they catch enough, they can go home and sell some of it. They might have some food for tomorrow without having to come back again tomorrow." And we can't comprehend that. We can't understand that. But that's just life. And by the way, that's life in most places in our world today. But that's so foreign to us. That's the world Jesus died for. That's the world that Jesus loves. And we get so settled and so self-sufficient and complacent in the world that we live in today, we've completely lost sight of a world out there that needs Jesus. God help us. And I purposely wanted Brother Netterville to come here for our conference next week, as soon as we got back from our trip, because I knew what God's going to... I've been on a mission trip before, and I knew what God's going to do in my heart. And I'm praying that God would use this in our church to give us that worldview that we ought to have, that we would realize the world doesn't revolve around me. It's not all about me. I'm not all right. I need God's help more than I can realize. And Jesus died for the whole world, not just us. You think of this. How many times did you hear the gospel before you got saved? I don't even know. I'd imagine it would be in the hundreds, if not over 1,000 times, I heard the gospel before I was saved. And I didn't grow up in a gospel preaching church. But most people in our world have never one time heard the gospel. How effective are we in bringing the gospel to the world when we're focused? And sometimes I hear people foolishly say, "Well, we got enough problems here. We don't have to go around the world." Well, only if you want to obey God. God said to go into all the world, preach the gospel. Jesus died for the whole world, not just us. In fact, that's the problem that we have, is because we're so centered on ourselves, we've forgotten the very basic command of Christianity, the very basic example of Jesus Christ, that He gave Himself for the whole world. But it's all about us today. And that literally is what kills Christians today. It made us stagnant and ineffective in our day today. God help us to be what we ought to be. Our worldview needs to change. And this book is the only thing that I know that'll change it. I'm asking you to